That's right. You know, if they can go from Agnes to Agnieszka, then you go, well, my done. Job is done.
Yes. Yes. I will set up as the goal.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We are on another episode of Bite Angle. And I'm Dr. Bernard Siu, and I'm joined by Agnes. Agnes is a speech therapist, and I think I would like her to introduce herself and what she does. Welcome, Agnes.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. Yeah, so everybody calls me Agnes, although my name is Agnieszka.
Yes.
I'm originally from Poland, and my story of becoming a speech therapist in Singapore is a little bit funny, because I arrived here not thinking that I can work as a speech therapist, because back home in Poland, you have to have perfect speech, and you have to be actually a native speaker to become a speech therapist.
Okay.
But when I came, I started to volunteer because I just couldn't sit at home doing nothing. So it happened to be that I've been assigned to one of the APSN schools, so the special needs schools. And to be a volunteer there, I had to give them my resume. And they looked that I'm a speech therapist. And they said, hey, you speech therapist, we have shortage of speech therapists. Mm. Why don't you start working? And I was like, mom, I'm not English native speaker. How can I be a speech therapist here? But it turned out that, yes, it was really a huge shortage of speech therapists. And that's how I started to work here as a speech therapist.
And tell us a little bit about your place of work.
So I'm currently working in my very tiny private practice where I'm alone. It kind of is hard for me to wrap my brain around it, but next year it's going to be 20 years.
20 years? Yeah, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
So I work with children with a variety of speech, language, communication difficulties.
So you work with children up to the age of 18?
Yes.
Yes. Can you run us through what you do with your clientele, basically? So when how are they referred to you? Usually you get referred to by doctors, or, you know, is it from teachers, caretakers?
Mm. Yeah. So I guess a lot comes from school teachers, preschool teachers, or early intervention centers. There is a group of people who are being referred to me by developmental pediatricians who picked up that something is unusual, and they will refer to me. Some other professionals like occupational therapists or physiotherapists or psychologists also refer, or parents themselves that just Google me out. And
Yes. And what are usually their concerns when they come to see you? I'm sure there's a whole range of them, but what are the really popular ones?
My child is not talking. Mm. Or my child is not talking as much as he or she should. Sometimes it's feeding challenges, sometimes drooling. And nowadays, majority of the children will be also neurodivergent. So children who either already have the diagnosis of ADHD, ASD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, or are suspected that they might meet the criteria.
Mm. Do you find that sometimes you get a huge range of, suspected diagnoses, but it might not be the right one? Or so how does that work? So let's say I've got a child and I'm not sure what's wrong, but basically the speech is not, or the communication is not as good as I think it might be, but it would be a layperson's assumption. And then I come to a speech therapist and go, what can I do here? Mm-hmm. So run me by of how that would work with the diagnosing and the therapy that they will go through.
So it's actually usually the opposite. I think a lot of the parents, they somewhere down the gut, they feel something is off, but they don't want that diagnosis.
Yes, okay.
Obviously understandable.
Yeah.
So they will come with hopes that, it's maybe just a speech delay.
Mm.
I think it is, because it's not just, right? But
yes,
that it might be a speech delay, or they hope that this is something that the child can outgrow or overcome, right? So, of course, not every parent, but quite, I think a higher percentage would rather be the ones who want to avoid the diagnosis.
Yes, yes.
But usually, the first concern, I guess, is not talking. Mm. And then it kind of rolls out typically with what else is happening, because the child that comes to see me does not exist in a vacuum, as in it's not suddenly just a speech or communication problem that comes to see a speech therapist.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
It's the whole person.
Yes.
And typically my role is to really take a little bit broader view during the initial evaluation.
Mm.
I look at the posture.
Mm.
I look how the child is moving.
Mm.
I look at the family dynamics. Mm. What's happening with the relationship? Is the child turning towards parents and trying to communicate with them? How is the child reacting to me?
Yes.
How is even the child reacting to my office, to the environment? Do they come in eagerly or are they terrified, right? So I'm observing different sensory processing, possible challenges or strengths.
Yes, yes.
And then I have to kind of like decide where do I take the evaluation. For some of the kids, it will mean, okay, I will have to probably look a little bit more into their oral motor structures, right? I might have to ask a little bit about feeding, about their toothbrushing, how do they accept that. And for some of the kids, I will not, because the focus will be solely on the communication and social pragmatics
Yes. Challenges. Yes. And can you tell usually quite quickly whether it's a motor issue or is a broader communication concern?
I would say yes, although, you know, the way how I'm doing it, before I even see the child, I send the questionnaire to parents. So I'm getting a little bit of idea of what's going on. The questionnaire is quite detailed, and not always parents do really remember everything, because I'm asking, when was the child crawling? When did they sit down? You know, all those first kind of developmental milestones in the child's life. Or how was the child as a baby? How was the pregnancy? Or how was the birth? It all kind of matters
to
what will happen later in the child's life.
Yes.
So that's my first kind of idea of what can I expect. And then, of course, there is also a contact with parents, whether it's over the phone or WhatsApp message or email. I try to kind of get the idea what they are concerned about, because that will give me also some concept of what's going on, right?
Yes.
And then comes the actual evaluation where I observe the child.
Yes. You mentioned feeding before, and so you will sometimes see babies, right, or very under the age of one, so toddlers.
Very rarely.
Oh, really?
Very rarely.
So we're talking about feeding issues that's slightly later.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about breastfeeding necessarily.
Breastfeeding specialist.
Yes. Okay. Good to clear that up. But so then you're talking about just eating? Is that?
Okay. So we have to kind of separate things.
Yes.
Because the pharyngeal is a big part of swallowing. It's actually dysphagia.
Yes.
And I would not cover that.
These
are speech therapists that work in hospitals.
Right.
They have equipment. They can do X-ray imaging when the person is swallowing and so forth. So my role is to look at the pre-feeding capacities and oral phase of swallowing.
Yes. Okay. This is where our lines interconnect, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. We're going to dive a little bit deeper in this path. So when you see a certain, it would often be motor issues when it comes to the feeding. And so when they come to you, firstly, do you get some clients or patients that come to you going, you know, I never knew that you actually will manage or help with the therapy of this particular department. And I'm assuming some clients are unaware who to go to, even if they had an issue, right? So in those cases, do you get referrals from doctors, dentists? Do you see much of that here?
Dentists, really not as
not,
much.
Not as much.
Surprisingly.
Okay.
Yeah, not as much. But doctors, yes.
Mm,
yeah.
Okay. And usually well, in your case, it will be pediatricians, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they come to you and then it's basically usually because they find that there is an undernourished child that has certain issues that they're not sure what they're dealing with, or it's very, very specific, like, you know, go to Agnes and have this one, you know, your tongue motor function sorted.
No, it's usually not that specific.
No, not that specific. Okay.
It's much more complex, and
yes,
the majority of the children that will come to see me for feedings, they basically present with a lot of sensory processing challenges,
yes, okay,
related to feeding. And then there will be the mental kind of challenges that,
right,
the child is already refusing food, right?
Or okay,
like removing certain group of foods from their diet, extremely limiting their diets.
Yes.
There are, especially among the neurodivergent population, you know, like children on the autism spectrum disorder, they can limit food based on color, and they will only eat, I don't know, cream color food and touch anything. Or
yes,
they can limit food based on the texture
or
even the flavor. And it's usually associated with other, not directly related to feeding yet,
yes,
very much important for that, other behaviors such as biting and chewing on non-food items.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Seeing
yes,
the kind of input in the mouth that they are
yes,
not getting from food, from objects around them or even their own clothes.
Yes.
Yeah, so this kind of behaviors are behaviors of like extreme refusal of eating or eating very little, or not being able to sit down for a meal, or not using utensils, and or tolerating only some kind of utensils, but let's say not being able to drink from a cup and not being able to drink from the straw. And parents have to use a syringe to give liquids. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So in a situation like this, hypothetically, a doctor, a pediatrician has a patient like this and refers to you. Then where does the patient go from there with you in the way to improve that situation?
So I'll start with the, like I said, that will be the questionnaire that I'm sending
yes,
to parents.
Yeah.
I'll try to get in touch with the person that refers to get some idea of what they think,
yes,
right? Where, where they're thinking going. And then it's the first appointment.
Yes.
And I, because I work with kids,
yes,
so I need to thread the waters
carefully. Yes, yeah.
It's not like in your scope of work, okay, welcome, let's jump on the
yes,
chair
open your mouth,
and I'm going to go right into your mouth.
Yes, exactly.
There's no way I can do it like that with the young children or with the children with some challenges, developmental challenges.
Yes.
So I usually try to help them settle, regulate, keep them calm. And I use parents to do that. So I ask the parents, why don't you let them choose whatever toy they want in my office and just start playing first. And I'll just sit in a corner and observe. That's basically my first step. And then I'm trying to watch what kind of posture the child has, what kind of interest, how does the child play, how does the child interact with the familiar person in the room, what kind of language do they use if they speak. And let you know, like slowly get myself involved in that process, mm. of maybe ask a question or maybe suggest or maybe grab a toy and join them in play to become a partner in that play. And only then I would do, depending on the situation, I will do my more thorough assessment. So okay. I might pull my oral motor tools.
Right.
So these are different things such as chewy tubes or Z-Vibe, which is like a vibrating little kind of like rubbery mm-hmm. toothbrush, but not with the bristles,
okay.
just with different edges.
Yes.
Or a new kind of brush, or I'm using different texture of beanbags to rub on the cheeks and basically evaluate what's going on
mm.
with the structures. I'm, of course, observing the jaw, observing the lips, observing the tongue. I might ask the child to blow bubbles, or, you know, I might ask questions. Are they accepting tooth brushing? If yes, what do they do? Who brushes the teeth? Is there a struggle? Is it easy? What kind of foods do they take and so forth? And I might go, depending on the situation, if let's say I see the child struggling with articulation, then I will pull the articulation test if I think the child can go through it, right?
Because
some of them will not be. And I try to gather as much information as possible and kind of like identify what are the different kind of challenges, because usually the kids that I'm seeing, it's not going to be just one thing.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Typically the child that comes to me, and let's say it will be a feeding challenge. It's usually not.
Oh, okay.
I even have, like recently, literally 2 weeks ago, I had a parent who approached me and she said, listen, my child has only feeding challenges. There's nothing else going on. Only feeding challenges. Said, okay.
Okay.
Fine.
Right.
Let's meet. And when I started to observe the girl, turned out she was in speech therapy early on.
Oh.
So there was the first indication that, okay, something must have been going on since she was in speech therapy. Yes, she's talking right now, but the language was not well developed. It was not really a conversational speech. There was a lot of postural challenges, and I was able to identify a lot of sensory processing challenges that indicate that, okay, all of that will come together and be a reason why there is a feeding challenge. So it's almost like we are looking at the tip of an iceberg.
Yes,
and we have to uncover everything that is underwater.
What's actually
there. And of course, I'm not going to be the one who's going to address every single thing. In that iceberg underneath the water. I need to know where my discipline ends and where do I cross-refer.
Yes.
Someone else.
Yes.
Right.
And then in that situation, when you cross-refer, who do you cross-refer to?
So it will depend really on the situation. It's very often occupational therapists for the sensory processing difficulties. If I see significant motor, gross motor challenges and postural challenges, it will be the physiotherapist. If I see, like, in the child I've seen yesterday, an extreme tongue tie that actually contributed to very unintelligible speech.
Right. How old was this child?
5 years, eight
months. Oh, wow. Okay.
And basically when I did the articulation test, the age relevance was 2 years, 3 months old child. So you can imagine the number of articulation errors. But the tongue tie was really significant. So automatically I referred to a dentist.
I see.
Because I'm not going to be the one who is going to decide, are we going to do the frenulectomy, right?
Yes, yes.
It has to be the person who is qualified to do that.
Yes, yes. And so we were speaking a little bit earlier about the cross-referrals, right? And you did mention that there has been a challenge when you refer to dental specialists especially, that you don't get any feedback, communication back to you.
There is even a bigger challenge, honestly, that it happened a couple of times. Right now I try to refer directly to a dentist that I know is aware of the problem. Because in the past, it happened to me that I discovered a tongue tie or lip tie
mm.
in a child, and the parents took the child to their regular dentist.
Yes.
Who could not help. And they were kind of like even surprised that something like lip tie exists.
Right. So, okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
So, not educated or yeah, exposed so
not,
to that.
It's simply not their area of specialty, yeah, yes, and I can yes, understand yeah, that. But
exactly.
Yeah. So, it has to be that I need to know to whom I'm referring. And yes, honestly, my experience, and it's not only with dentists, right? It's with ENTs as well. It's like I will tell the parent and I'll say, hey, listen, your child needs to see this and this specialist. And usually, I don't get the feedback. I don't get like a contact from the person, and I only see the child after whatever the procedures are being done, and
I see.
Get information from parents.
Yeah. Right, right, okay. So yeah, that's interesting. Was that the same outside Singapore when you were practicing in Poland?
It's a little bit different,
right.
And I guess a little bit more structured, as in there is an exchange of information,
yeah,
and
yes.
It's almost like a compulsory to have
right,
some level of the documentation to follow.
Yes,
right. I guess you know in Singapore, a lot of things related to my profession is fairly new.
Yes, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's not like we came to work yesterday, but
yes,
yeah. It is fairly new. So not everything is yet developed in such a way. And anyway, I think the problem comes a little bit from the way how we are all trained.
Yes, yeah.
We are trained in silos.
Yes,
in silos. Yeah, and honestly, you know, like when I think back about my university, the way I was trained, no one ever mentioned anything about sensory processing.
Yes.
It's like, how can you if majority of my clients actually come with some challenges in
yes,
that area?
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
Or I remember we did have some classes with the psychologists, but it was like really a little bit. And yes, we had a very difficult to pass anatomy test.
Yes.
But not so much about the function.
No,
exactly, that,
right? Exactly.
So, so I think we need to, and I guess a lot of professionals are saying that we need to start really thinking outside of our disciplines.
Yes.
And it does
yes.
not mean that I will suddenly become a dentist.
No,
or,
but,
I don't know, a physiotherapist, but I need to be aware, right?
Yes,
of
yes.
What's
and now our bodies are so complex to the point that to your point is that, and that's led us to this conversation now because my curiosity is not so much within dentistry itself, but how does the, you know, our oral care, relate to everything else in the body? So, you know, I've brought in a nutritionist. And we're eventually going to bring in a cardiologist as well, and ENT specialist. So we've talked about how the body shows up in certain diseases that we will see in the mouth. And so why I was asking all these questions about the process of how you get to your clientele is because I think as a dentist, we have this very unique ability to see a lot of the population. And I think there's been statistics to show that people see dentists more than they see doctors. Because they go, well, I'm not sick. I'm not going to see the doctor.
Yeah.
Not always the case, but even in physicianship, that needs to change where we actually see the doctor like we go to school, or we get an education of our own bodies and our own systems. And a lot of times in the mouth, it's that, oh, I've got this painful tooth and I'm going to fix that tooth. But if we just step out, okay, why do you have this tooth problem? Is there other problems in the mouth? It's not in isolation. And then what is it that is causing this? Because we forget that the mouth is part of the gut. And you mentioned, you know, feeding, communication, all those things, you know, converge in this one area. And then we get patients that come in and say, and it's often never about speech, but they will say, I don't like how my teeth look, right? When I smile, I don't see my top teeth. And then I will have to broach the subject about, okay, we're going to fix, we can fix that aesthetically, but functionally, how is that going to change? Your jaw position is going to change. Your speech is going to change. And how much of that speech change will be adaptable, and when do we need to actually get a speech therapist involved, right? So that has actually been a big question mark for me, only because a lot of times, even when I broach this subject with the patients, they'll go, no, you know, I'll just live with this. That's okay, you know. More and more I'm getting some clientele because of their level of affluence or also their level of just self-awareness, that they will go, oh, okay, this is an area that we can explore. Why not? Let's you know, see whether we can change it. And why I think earlier on I was bringing up actors only because I deal with a lot of teenagers and also adults doing aligner therapy. So they will actually wear an aligner that will be slightly thick, but it will cause a lisp. And I was very curious to see how they would get over the lisp. And interestingly enough, there are two sets of people, and it's their behavior that really then sets them apart. One type of behavior is that, oh, this is giving me a lisp. I don't want to talk funny. I'm not going to wear this whenever I talk. So they never get used to it. And then the what I found most fascinating was that I had an actor patient came in, and within a couple of days, she was speaking perfectly on screen as well, wearing the aligners. And I then asked her, how did you do that so quickly, you know, faster than anybody else? She goes, what I ended up doing was just doing my 10,000 hours is that with the aligners in, I went home, read a book out loud, you know, enunciate everything with the aligners in, and then I got to that point. So I think that's kind of a trick that she learned herself just by practicing, but I'm sure as a speech therapist, you are very aware of, you know, methods that people can do. So it's sad to hear that you know, the communication almost seems to go one way, but from my point of view, it's that I'm trying to get people a bit more aware that even speech therapy exists. And two is that how can dentists be better at recognizing certain things that we will be able to then, you know, get your expertise to help as well. So I think that would be my question now, is that how can I help you in that sense? Okay. Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I guess observing the child, because that's what I can talk about,
right?
Children, not adults.
Yeah.
How do they communicate, right? And I'm not only saying about, okay, are they talking or not talking, not the obvious things, but are they able to hold conversation, right? The typical three-year-old should be able to start holding conversation. It might not always be very long, but at least for a few exchanges. The typical 5-6 years old should be able to build full sentences and be able to answer questions and be able to, like, answer your questions about, do you brush your teeth every day? What kind of food do you eat? And so forth, right? So if there are difficulties there, that's an indication that there's something going on with language, right? And when it comes to articulation, while certain sounds might take up to like 8 years of age to fully develop, a typical 6-7 years old should not sound like a baby. It should be really a clear articulation of the sounds. So that's another thing that...
And what do you mean by that as, like, not sound like a baby, as in the words get meshed? Yeah.
Yes.
Would you be able to give us an sound audio example to mimic a baby talk?
I probably won't. But basically what we are looking for, all the sounds should be really the same like you will expect in an adult.
Okay.
Right? So the S should sound like S and not going in between the teeth or not be exchanged by other phonemes, right?
Because right.
Typical for the child is, for instance, instead of saying cat, to say tat. And we call it an assimilation. It's just because of the placement. It's easier because, you know, in order to say that simple three-phoneme word, you have to first lower down the back of your tongue and make that glottal sound.
Yes.
And then you have to open your jaw and have that tongue in a neutral position for the vowel. And then you have to really stabilize the base of the tongue and move the tip of the tongue to the alveolar reach to get the t. And it's just a cat. So it's quite natural for, I don't know, a two-year-old to say tat instead of cat because they are just making the whole motor pattern easier, right? But if you're going to have a seven-year-old saying, I thought I saw a cat, there we go, I did it.
Very good.
Yes. So that will be a sign to look into and to refer to a speech therapist.
Right.
And when it comes to feeding, a three-year-old child should be able to have a proper rotary chewing. No longer the munching, no longer diagonal chewing. It has to be a proper rotary chewing. A child who is 18 months old should be able to lateralize the tongue tip to the sides. And it's very important for speech because it's actually a prerequisite for elevation and depression of the tongue tip and all those sounds.
And so that's where the tongue ties will really affect, right?
Yes. That's
So in your evaluation at the beginning, how do you get an 18-month-old to do the tongue movements? Do you just look
It's quite simple. So either I will use
I'm trying to learn from you here.
Either I use one of my tools, so one of the brushes, and I have that nuke brush, which really is just a rubber brush, and I'll place it on the side. And it's actually a involuntary action. So you don't have to think. It's natural. Think about how you're brushing your teeth, what your tongue does. It follows the toothbrush. And there's maybe, I don't know, a very small percentage of population when the tongue tip will go the opposite side. That's fine, but there has to be some response from the tongue, right? If it rests at the bottom of the mouth
and
or even
just
worse, goes to the very back, that something is happening, right? So you, with your tools, you can very easily get it, right? There should be some kind of movement of the
Which
tongue.
Is the most annoying thing. It's like...
For you.
It's the reverse. It's like, oh, this person's retreated the tongue away. That's great.
Great to do it, right? Yeah, but we are talking about, you know, observing the appropriate pattern. The natural reaction is really to follow.
Yeah, right. Okay, that explains a lot because when I see very young children, they're always just, you know, probing... Yeah. My instruments, right, with their tongue, which is, of course, the most natural thing to do. Okay, good tip.
So when you don't see it, and you can also ask the child, you know, just lick it. And, you know, for the little ones, you really can take an ice cream stick and put something they like to, just ask them to lick, right, in the worst case scenario if they don't do that. And if on demand they are not able to do that, that's... a big warning sign that something might be happening.
Yes. So tongue ties, quite easy for dentists to fix. One thing that we tend to sometimes see is that if there is a lot of mouth breathing. So yes, yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And there seems to be quite an increase of this now because of the allergens in the air.
The food we eat.
Yes, yeah. So and the interesting thing is that I am seeing a lot more speech issues with the kids, but also now the teenagers and the youths, yeah. Because I think they are also talking less. In some ways, they're communicating less using speech, right? Yeah, typing on
there. Grunts.
That's right. They're on the screens. Yes, yeah. So, it's almost like our motor skills are not put to use as much as before.
Yeah.
Now, does this you know, when a lot of times when your clients come to you. Do you often see these issues that go, okay, well, I think you need to see the ENT for this. You need to see the dentist mainly for the tongue ties, right? There's probably another thing that I try to educate the parents about is the stage when their teeth are developing from transitioning from the baby teeth to the adult teeth. And usually the biggest tell that something's going on is the amount of space they have in their jaw. But one thing that I try to bring up with my clients is that the speech is also somewhat affected because if they're mouth breathers, they tend to be lispers.
Cool.
Yeah, and the tongue has very poor muscle tone, right? Would it be worthwhile? I'm assuming you don't. You were saying you don't get a lot of referrals from dentists, or even pediatric dentists. Not so much. Okay, I find that quite surprising. But I think we'll try to change that because. But I don't know how, and I hope that patients are more open to see a speech therapist. In concurrence with their treatment to expand the jaw as well, because I think if the tongue is still very weak at the end of it, that doesn't change because we often see a lot of poor lip competency even after we've fixed the problem. It's because they just don't know how to use it. It's habitual, isn't it?
It's such a domino effect, actually.
It is, yeah.
You know, and I think that it's the problem is that if we already have a mouth breather, probably a lot of things already happened and been going for quite a while. And therefore, I think like integrated care will be needed because, okay, what happens when the typical person breathes? We use the nose to breathe.
Yes.
Our tongue. Tip is right behind the teeth on the alveolar ridge. The rest of the tongue is actually resting on the roof of the mouth, on the palate, right?
Yes.
The lips are closed and we are breathing through the nose. That's a typical appropriate breathing. The mouth breather means what happens immediately. The tongue flops down to the bottom of the mouth and very often starts to push on the jaw, right?
Yes.
So a lot of processes are being affected. So when we have that tongue up to the palate, right, we are widening the maxilla,
exactly.
top bone, right? And what we really want, ideally, it's flat and wide palate.
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
It's great for speech because the tongue tip easier can
to touch,
reach the area and produce those sounds. But it's also important for breathing because the palate is the base for the nasal airways, right? The passage. Plus, it gives the enough space for the occlusion, right? For the teeth to form. So they're
exactly.
not becoming the V-shape, but rather the U-shape teeth.
Yes.
But it also has an amazing effect on the mandibular on the lower jaw, right? Because when the natural suction of the tongue against the palate, this relaxes the cheeks, right? And therefore, the jaw in natural or appropriate development moves a little bit forward, right? And that's the proper position. But if we don't have that pressure on the palate, the cheeks is kind of trying to compensate, and therefore the whole jaw is actually retracting. And as a long-term result, I'm not saying it happens always, but it can cause TMJ issues, right?
For sure.
And TMJ issues might lead to, I don't know, tension, headaches, grinding.
Yes,
and
yes.
Other it's problems, a, right? Plus, you know, when you have the retracted jaw, you're going to have trouble to control the airflow and control the placement of your articulators, right? And
and then so much more risk of getting sleep apnea.
Yes.
Yeah, and snoring.
And
snoring
and other challenges, right? So when we have already someone who breathes through the mouth, the process has been ongoing for quite a while, and the structures are already changing for a while. So there is a lot of challenges. And unfortunately, yeah, like we were you were mentioning earlier, our current diet contributes to that, because we eat so much more processed food,
which requires less chewing. It's
just ready there, almost like the birds that prepare the food for their young.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we see as
and
well.
And another thing that we observe, and I speak to parents often, is we have this habit of putting our babies in front of screens for feeding and for meal times and to for anything, basically.
Right, yes, that. Yeah.
And it's such a disruptor of the appropriate process, because feeding is not only putting food in the mouth. Feeding is, it happens before you even see the food when you smell it. Right? You get the first information, okay, what's that? And your brain, your entire nervous system is getting ready. And then you look at that food and you are able to identify. Imagine yourself going to a restaurant with unknown cuisine, right?
Even
before you put it in your mouth, you kind of look at that and you're thinking, is that going to be chewy? Is that going to be crunchy? Is that mushy?
Right.
Right? So you are able to, you're almost preparing yourself, and your salivary glands will start producing, if I don't know, you see, I don't know, you smell a spicy food or something, right? So you're getting ready. Your nervous system is getting ready long before you put that food in the mouth, based on your past experiences. Yeah, and when we put the child with a screen, we take it away from them, because they are
They're
focusing on that pepper or the bluey or whatever they want.
Oh, that is interesting. I never thought about it.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Oh. My son's not getting a screen now.
Oh, no. He's not going to like me. I'm not saying at all, right?
No,
I'm
yes, of course.
When it's a habitual thing.
Yeah.
And so many times, I mean, how many times do we see children somewhere sitting in a coffee shop with that screen throughout the entire meal?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah.
But that is really fascinating. That's great. Yeah. Anything else that we should really cover? Anything that you'd like to say to us? There's one question that I often would ask my guests. One is the is there one takeaway that we can do at home that would help the, I guess, will be the nutrition part, the eating of solids. but are there exercises that we can do? Are there things that we can ensure that we can be very habitual about that would minimize problems, especially, you know, with our children? Is there anything that we can help them with that will be so habitual that would be, you know, useful, but very, very easy to implement?
I guess being present during meals and really making sure that there is a connection. Meantime is such a beautiful time when we can really start talking to each other. And that promotes, of course, the development of communication and language and speech, right? But we can also point you know, the qualities of the food and talk, that was a bit chewy, or I really like the sweet flavor and it looks so good, right? So talking about those sensory quality of food And paying attention and modeling the use of utensils.
Right.
Observing parents.
Yes.
What they do with the food. So not eating meals separately, everyone in on the corner, right? But happens
yes,
so
no,
often,
no,
it, right? I mean,
very much
come on nowadays.
No, yes.
And in Singapore, I guess, another very important thing. So often we rely on the nannies, on the
yes.
foreign domestic workers.
Yes.
Which have so many other things on their mind
yes,
that
yes.
they rush through meals
yes,
with the babies
yes.
and with the toddlers, right?
That's right, yes.
And usually it leads to overstuffing the mouth or feeding inappropriately. So mm-hmm. like, you know, the scrapping of the spoon
right,
is one
right.
of those things that,
oh,
you know, gives
okay.
me a goosebump. So when I think about it,
yes.
Taking time
yes.
for the meals, taking time for toothbrushing.
That's
yes. a sensory exploration. It's
yes.
not only hygiene and making sure that those teeth are clean, right?
Yes, yes.
And not waiting. That's, I'm sure, something that you say as well. Don't wait until you're going to have the whole set of teeth to start the toothbrushing. The moment you have
yeah,
the
yes,
first
yes,
one,
yeah.
start doing it. Or even before, there
yeah,
are those
yes.
brushes out there. On the market that are for the, you know, almost toothless.
Yeah,
mouth.
Yes, for the rubber finger yeah. brushes. Yeah,
yes.
They are very useful.
Make
yes.
sure, make sure that you do that. So
yes.
start early, make sure that you spend that time
yes. yeah.
During meals. And I guess another important part is trust your gut and don't wait.
Right.
Because
literally trust the gut?
Literally trust the gut. I mean,
yeah.
in both, yeah.
Yes.
As a parent,
yes.
if you have some concerns, we tend to kind of suppress it, right? We
yes,
try,
yes.
We tend to not listen to the gut. And it's usually not the best idea. It's usually the opposite. If you as a parent feel that something is off, whatever it would be, whether there's something off with the teeth or something off with the speech or something off with the feeding,
yes.
you are likely right. And be careful of whom you're listening to, because all the well-wishers
yes, yeah.
coming even from the place of love, right?
Yeah, yes,
so
yes,
family
yes.
members, or even, unfortunately, I had the situation, pediatrician, who will tell you, boys will be boys.
Right.
Or, you know, oh, I know this child who started talking at 4 years of age. Or give it a time. It's really not the best advice.
Yeah, yes, yes.
You know, my favorite, Einstein didn't talk until...
Yes, yes.
okay.
I think his yeah. mother nicknamed him the stupid one or something.
I don't know, but we have only one Einstein and so many of us.
Yes, I know. Exactly, yes. It's the
right.
outliers,
so
right? Yes, there's always a story.
That you're going to have another Einstein there.
Exactly, yeah. So, but no, it's so true. And this is what we see with our work as well. And actually, we found an increasing challenge to go against certain things that become viral on the on the internet, suddenly you probably would have heard of this, but mewing. yes, my daughter introduced me to the mewing, and I just thought it was the most ridiculous thing. But at the I started researching about the mewing. So yes,
okay.
you know, it is useful, but not in the way that you are thinking that it should be. And this becomes a longer and longer conversation in our office now, which is when a patient comes in and goes, oh, I read this, I saw this, and then you go, okay, well, this is true, but not in this context. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think, I guess the other advice I would like to give our listeners is that try to verify the information, right? And the trickiest thing now is also AI, okay? Yeah.
The misleading AI.
Yes, because again, it's like if 10 people say it's true, then it is true, right? But the problem is that if one untruth is repeated 10 times, then it becomes the majority view. And that's that I find the trickiest thing to challenge now. Yes. Are you finding certain challenges in your work situation now because of social media and because of modern technology?
Because there's a lot of, you can find so many accounts, it pops out on my social media, people who claim that they have credentials or they have knowledge, and they, say, populate some information. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was something called Gemini.
Right.
It was basically some kind of computer program that you are supposed to sit down the child in front of it, and it's supposed to teach your child to talk.
Right. How so? Just by repeating words?
You look at, I don't even know the details, right? Mm. But the whole idea just at the core makes me grind my teeth. I'm sorry.
Don't grind your teeth.
Yes, not that. I know. So, children don't learn to talk sitting still looking at this screen. Children learn exploring three-dimensional world with another human being there and modeling it.
Yeah.
And it's all based on relationship, on the social interaction. And the same comes for feeding or, other skills that we
need. Communication is...
Yeah, there's no such thing like you cannot create artificial...
Yes.
I don't know, artificial... game or even a robot that is going to replace the human being with all the advances that they are doing with AI of mimicking facial expressions or the intonational change. You cannot create, I hope, you cannot create another human being with the actual reaction, and it's all so important in our communication. It's really being present, right? And so that's one of the things that comes to my mind when you're talking about the AI.
Yes. And the last thing about communication is that this is an observation that I've made with a plastic surgeon friend of mine, and I made the comment that the people are lacking facial expressions now.
Too much.
Yes. To the point that I think at a certain point we are looking more like the artificial
those of creations. Us who never had anything done are the weird ones, probably.
No, that's
seriously.
It. Yeah,
a lot of people like, I'm going to sound very old, but a lot of people like, who know their better profile.
Yes.
Make all those
mouth
for selfies, right? It starts to look very much alike.
Oh, yes, yes,
yes.
If you
look at their
facial
features, right?
Yes.
And rather than as it was in nature and as it is, we all are different. We all look a little bit different. There are certain things that, yes, we have in common, but there is a range of variable. People start to look,
And I think, children will be very affected by this in a lot of ways. I mean, there was a long... debate years ago about Japanese anime and how the body structures are also exaggerated in the faces with the large eyes, and then people started wanting to use that as a human ideal, which was very strange, right? Yes,
very strange. The one thing that I was thinking really wondering during COVID time was the mask and the effect on development of children.
Very much so. Yeah.
And not only, breathing through the mask, that kind of encouraging the mouth breathing, unfortunately, but also the child not seeing the faces.
Yes, my son had that issue. Mm. Yeah, he could not recognize facial expressions.
Yeah.
Didn't know what angry or, it was just, weird.
Yeah.
And there's the other thing too. It's not our area, but COVID is because of the masks.
your plastic surgeon friend might be happy about that.
Yes, yes. And plastic surgeons had to adapt, by the way. They had to, because when you look at the screen, your face would look rounder, right? Because of the angle. And so they would do these exaggerated V-shaped jaws, almost like mouth breather jaws, if you think about it, to make them look real enough on screen, but they would look ridiculous in real life, right? But that's what people were going for during COVID times.
And I'm sure there will be
very strange.
Yes. Get the surgery to look like that.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah.
but yes, no, it's a very fluid situation when it comes to our work. But, now at least we know, how we can, as dentists, you know, point the direction for some of our patients that are, having challenges, especially with the children.
Yeah.
So the most important thing with kids is that, yeah, we tend to look more and more with development. I'm not a pediatric specialist, but I think every dentist should have the idea of what to look out for, because we tend to be the one at the front line, you know, being able to see all this, and GPs as well. Yeah.
And it's not about scaring the parents.
No, it's not about being aware.
The truth is that if the child with whatever kind of challenges will be referred early enough, it's going to be resolved faster.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's not going
exactly.
to grow into an actual big issue.
Yes, yes.
But if we're going to wait,
yes,
kind of like hesitate,
yeah,
it might really lead to potentially much profound challenges.
Yeah, it happened with my son. So I noticed that he was mouth breathing, and I was immediately concerned because I was very aware of the issues, and his jaw was starting to shift. By the age of 4, we got him to see the ENT, and we had his adenoids and turbinates fixed. Fortunately, no need for the tonsils. And it made a massive difference. And now, he's 7 now, and his jaw is perfect. Yeah, and I didn't need to touch it, right? So we had a lot of things backwards before. Because like what you mentioned, that we were acting in silos. And a lot of times patients then actually create silos for us as well, right? They go, no. So many times I would speak to my patients about diet, about and they go, you don't need to know. It's like, let me be the judge of that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I would often have to say, not to be a busybody, right? But, you know, what are you doing this? And how are you exercising? What are you doing? And, you know, because sometimes they will come to me and go, doc, I'm eating good food. I'm like, it's nothing to do with good or bad. Just very literally, I want to know what you are taking, because, you know, the acidity affects, you know, your, the amount of chewing you do affects, the type of exercise you do affects. So we need to know all these things so that we can get a very good picture.
Yeah.
But it makes our job very difficult too, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
When we have all this information and we have to kind of picture it, it doesn't go into the McDonaldization of like, okay, this is one service I'm going to provide for you. If you don't fit in that square box, too bad, right?
Yeah, it sounds sometimes, I do get the feel sometimes, especially with new parents, right, who
come
to me for the first time when I'm starting to talk about the nutrition or,
you
know, please watch out. Don't let the child just snack throughout the day.
Yes,
focus more on the main meals, because it really leads to a lot of challenges. Or if I mention, please ditch this sippy cup.
Oh, yes, yeah, right.
They usually look at me like, hey, we didn't come here
to get a lecture,
right?
You're
not the nutritionist, you're not supposed to, but that's true. Like, you know, sippy cups, a topic that probably every speech therapist can talk for hours. And I guess dentists as well,
yes,
because it's not only, you know, anatomically inappropriate. It teaches the child to use much more pressure to actually draw the liquid than drinking from an open cup or a straw
would require.
But also what goes into the sippy cups, it's usually the sweet drinks.
Yes.
And then the child keeps sipping the name goes.
Yes.
Sip here, sip there, and the sweet drink sits there in the mouth throughout the day, all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Then both you and me have problems, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So many, many good little bite-sized advice. So thank you so much, Agnes. Any last words for our audience?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.